Call the meeting to order. The quorum is present. Representative Torkelson, have you had a chance to look over the minutes?
In detail.
Would you like to move them?
I would love to move the minutes. Thank you very much.
Representative Torkelson moves the minutes from the March 10th meeting. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Today on the agenda, well, first of all, a little housekeeping. Cell phones, please shut them off. If they ring, it's $1 in the kitty. If you answer them, it's $5 in the kitty. There's coffee for everybody up there. Right, Representative Junkie?
Exactly.
All right, just want to make sure you agreed. So, today on the agenda, we have budget discussion on the Plant Protection Division first from the Department of Agriculture. And if you would, today's your day, if you'd like to state your name for the record and who you represent, and we'll go from there.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, hold on, please.
Representative. Mr. Chair, before we get going on that, if I could make a request of the department, like we made yesterday, as this committee would like to see Ms. Cheney a list of, and Mr. Ernst and others, a list of all the monies that are spent in the department that aren't spent in the department. Monies that go to governor staff, that go to Washington, D.C. offices, that go to contracts for IT or University of Minnesota, or anything that's not spent on office supplies for you or personnel for you or cars for you. If you could provide that list in the next week or so, that'll be helpful to our budget deliberations. And I know Veterans Affairs had no problem doing that. I assume you can get that to us too without me writing you a letter.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Jane.
Speaking with the Department of Agriculture, we can certainly get that information to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other comments before we get started? All right, if you'd also let us know the number in the budget book so we can follow along. I believe the first page is page 32. Is that correct, Ms. Cheney?
I'm looking it up right now, Mr. Chair. Can I also make a brief announcement?
Please.
The cookies, as requested, are organically grown. They're Country Choice Organic Mineral Wafers and Ginger Snaps from a Minnesota company that's based in Eden Prairie.
All right, thank you. Thank you for that. And Representative Junkie, you notice we have cookies today.
Amazing.
Yes.
Mr. Chair,
I wanted to point that out. So, again, to our testifiers, if you'd like to state your name for the record and proceed, please.
Page 32 is correct.
Pardon me?
Page 32 is correct.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to be here. My name is Pierre Frito. I'm the director of the Plant Protection Division, and we also oversee the apiary program, so I should have brought some honey if I'd
Honey is good.
Okay, just here's our mission statement. Oops, come on. So the Plant Protection Division, this just very briefly, this is our mission statement. It's basically to protect Minnesota agriculture and environment from plant pests, and then also to provide certification services for agriculture and market opportunities. We have two key responsibilities. One is plant pest exclusion and management, and then the other is crop and commodity inspection and certification for both exports and imports. This is our basic structure. I'm the director. My assistant director is Chuck Drake. We have six basic units. We have about 68 FTEs, and then we hire between 50 and 80 seasonal staff, which is highly dependent on federal funding.
Mr. Creso, please, we'd like to welcome, we have some students here today. If we could welcome the 9th through the 12th grade students, is that correct? 9th through the 12th grade students from the Heritage Christian Academy, right? So, well, welcome. This is the Agriculture, Rural Development, and Veterans Affairs Committee, and we're going over the budget discussion on the Plant Protection Division today. So, exciting stuff. So, all right, welcome.
And they have cookies over there now, too.
Yeah, and we have cookies for you as well. So, very good. Risa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a basic overview of the division. We get about $4.7 million in general funds. We have dedicated funds budgeted at about $6 million, and then federal grants is about $2.7 million, so the total buy-in budget is $13.6 million. Now, I was going to go through by unit. I thought that was the easiest way to explain the division and how we function. And I know that sometimes doesn't match up very well with BDS, but I thought this is easiest. We have a seed inspection program. This is all dedicated fees. It's a $943,000 budget. It's primarily funded by seed permit fees, and these are folks who are called the initial labeler. So whoever creates that first seed label, they are the ones that pay the seed permit fee. And then the other source of funding is from brand registrations, and there's about 400 brands registered in Minnesota. Annual seed sales in Minnesota is fairly large, about $500 million a year. We have about 8,000 dealers, and we work very closely with county ag inspectors to assist us with our this program. We have a fruit and vegetable inspection program. This is mostly fee-funded at $436,000. We do get some general fund. This program basically is a fee-for-service primarily in that the retailers or wholesalers will ask us to provide grading services for fruits and vegetables coming into the state. We also do food safety audits on farms, and then we do potato grading certification. We do about a 1.5 million hundredweight per year. We have a potato inspection program located out in East Grand Forks. It's primarily a fee-based program at $823,000, and we do get some general funds for that as well. We hire about 38 seasonal staff to help us, and we inspect about 950 million pounds in East Grand Forks and the Park Rapids office. We have a seed potato program. This is completely fee-funded at $256,000. Minnesota is about the fourth largest producer of seed potatoes in the country, although that number is going down every year. Currently, we're at about 8,000 acres of seed potatoes, and we have about 33,000 acres of commercial potatoes. This is what East Grand Forks looks like today. We are still paying off this building in East Grand Forks. The bond payment in FY10 is about $30,000, and in FY11 about $28,000. The building should be paid off, we think, in about 3 or 4 years. We have an export certification program. All countries, including the United States, require that if you send in unprocessed commodities or plants, it has to be certified as being free of certain pests. We issue about 3,000 of these certificates every year. The certificates we charge between $25 and $75 per certificate, depending on the size of the or the value of the commodity. And Asia is currently their largest market, and interestingly enough, Taiwan and Vietnam are the two countries that we issue the most FIDO certificates to. I thought I'd just throw this slide in because I thought it was interesting. You can see what a huge piece soybeans are for FIDO certificates. Over 56% of our certificates are just for soybean grain and then soybean meal, and then you can see corn DDGs from the ethanol industry is almost 15% of the FIDO, so a big share from grain in Minnesota. And it's also interesting to note when we saw the dollar go down, we saw a huge increase in FIDO. So it's just interesting to watch how it affects our program.
Excuse me, Mr. Friesel. We have a question. Representative Junkie.
Where's the corn DDGs going with those certificates? Where are they going to?
Mr. Friesel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, primarily to Asia.
Asia too.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have a small apiary inspection program budgeted at about $7,000. This is primarily to meet export requirements of other states. Minnesota has about 30 migratory beekeepers. And migratory beekeepers are those that are pretty large producers, and they move their bees to other states primarily for pollination. Almonds, for example, is a very big revenue producer for Minnesota beekeepers. And so we have to meet California's requirements. We inspect those beehives, and there's about 65,000 hives that move in and out of Minnesota every year. We have a very robust nursery program or industry in Minnesota. Currently, it has all dedicated bees at about 737,000. We have about 314 growers, and they produce about $100,000 in revenue, and we have about 2,200 nursery dealers. And we're basically certifying that the Minnesota-grown stock is free of various tests. And again, that's to meet either international or interstate standards. And then we also inspect for nursery stock coming into Minnesota to make sure it's free of things like gypsy moth or emerald ash borer or sudden oak death or diseases or pathogens like that. We have a relatively small noxious weed program that's really limited to providing some support to counties. We provide some training, so there's only about $4,000 there. We have a large gypsy moth program. We set about 20,000 traps every year. Last year we caught 12,000 moths. That's about four times as many moths as has ever been caught in Minnesota history. So this is a pest that's slowly moving into the state. And in the next year, we are proposing the treatments on about 37,000 acres in southeast Minnesota, about 300 acres in Minnetonka, 382 in Richfield, and almost 72,000 acres up on the North Shore. This is where we get a lot of our funding. I'll just show you a picture there. That's how they used to deal with gypsy moth. They'd climb up these trees and scrape off the egg masses. This is in the early 20s. That would have been me standing on the ground. I certainly wouldn't be up there in the tree. Also presents some liability challenges for state employees these days. We get about $600,000 from STS. STS is called the Slow the Spread program, and it's an association of 10 states have bound together, and we are and the foundation is funded by the U.S. Forest Service. We get about $8 to $10 million a year from the foundation, and then the state divvy up the money depending on what the gypsy moth pressure happens to be. We also get about $15,000 direct from USDA Forest Service, about $62,000 from USDA APHIS, that's the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service, and then we have some general funds, about $617,000, so the total is about $1.3 million. And then we also get indirect support from STS, and what I mean by that is that many of the treatments that are done in Minnesota are not paid for by the state. They are paid by the actual foundation itself. So some of those treatments on the North Shore, those are paid by the foundation, and it's usually about $2 million worth of treatments that Minnesota benefits from this program.
Excuse me, Mr. Friesel. On the expense, the budget report that we have in front of us, there's been a major reduction of $101,000 under the 2010 Governor Rec. Does that have to do, it's been cut by over $101,000. Does that have to do with the inspections or the surveillance of the gypsy moth?
Mr. Chair, what I believe that that was funds that was for the technology or GIS, and it's moving from
it's under the part-time seasonal labor. It's on the first page.
Yeah,
of the handout. Yeah. We're bringing a copy up to you if you don't have one.
Okay.
So loose now. You see where that is? No question.
Yes. Mr. Chair, we do see where it is. Where we are attempting to respond to your question.
All right. Take your time.
Mr. Chair, I think we sorted it out.
Okay.
That is the plant pest survey, and I'll be getting to that at the end of my presentation, so that there is a reduction of 2.2 FTEs associated with that.
Okay.
Reduction.
Thank you.
Please proceed. Sorry. Okay. Okay, invasive species, we have about 724,000 associated with this program. And we deal with a lot of different pests under this program. We also get a fair amount of funding. One issue that has really alarmed the potato industry is there was a recent find 2 years ago of a pest called potato cyst nematode in Idaho, and this is quite alarming. It's a pest that does not exist in the United States until this finding in Idaho. We get $425,000 from USDA APHIS, and we're attempting to sample all 8,000 acres of seed potatoes in the state and also 10% of the commercial acres. And we want to first off verify that the pest does not exist in Minnesota, but that also helps us from an export standpoint because many countries, Canada, Mexico, and EU, require that you can prove that you don't have this particular pest. Emerald ash borer, I think, is on many people's radar screen. This is one we work very closely with DNR, the Forest Service, and also USDA. We receive about $61,000 from USDA APHIS and the Forest Service about $60,000, and then we match about $60,000 from the state. We've spent a lot of work over the last several years. We've developed a multi-agency readiness plan. We set about 800 trap trees a year, and recently there's been a new trap developed called the sticky trap, the big purple trap, and we set about 1,000 of those traps every year. Some other invasives that we are concerned about are cereal cyst nematode. We get about $20,000 from USDA APHIS for that. Carnal bunt is a wheat disease, primarily of export concern. We sample every year for that one. It's never been found in Minnesota. We have a base support for general surveys from USDA APHIS of $75,000, and then we get some Forest Service money looking for another forest pest called wood wasp for about $25,000. And then just a number of other pests, and these are always constantly changing. Some of the things that we look for include things like sweet midge, light brown apple moth, which is a very big deal in California.
So we just heard a phone go off. That's $1 for the coffee kitty, whoever's phone that was. All right. Was that Samantha?
It's the Sergeant at Arms.
All right. All right. When they come back in, we'll address it then. I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad I turned my phone off. We also look for Douglas fir beetle, Grecian foxglove, and right now a very big concern to us has been firewood, because firewood is a very good pathway for a number of forest pests, including gypsy moth and emerald ash borer, so we are working very closely with DNR and focusing our attention to make sure that any firewood that comes from a quarantine area that we're looking into it. Plum pop and potato mop top virus. Now, I'd like to show this because the animal people always show pictures of burning cows and sheep and things, so I would like to show that we get to burn things too, and this is we're burning geranium that were infested with a disease called Ralstonia, which is a very serious potato disease. And we had it 2 years in a row, 2003 and 2004, and we managed to have a few bonfires, which the staff greatly enjoyed. We have an odd little program called Wolf Elk Damage Compensation that has typically been funded at about $100,000 a year, and the program has always run very well, especially on the wolf side. It goes up and down, varies from maybe $40,000 of expenses, maybe up to $90,000. But what has happened recently is there's been a growing elk herd up in the far northwest corner of the state. And usually we only get one or two elk claims a year, and at that, most years we didn't get any. But we had, because of this growing elk herd, the fund was exhausted prematurely this year, just a few months into the fund. So we have a proposal in. We're asking for a $50,000 increase, and we would also like to separate the two funds, because what's happening is the elk pressure is making us unable to respond to the wolf claim.
Yes, Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What sort of damage are the elk doing, Mr. Friesel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, primarily it's when a group of elk get into either a soybean field or a sunflower field, so they're just trampling the fields down or eating it. They also get onto hay bales. So we pay for crop damage, but I also understand there's been some damage to fencing and things like that. So we would only compensate for the crop damage.
Or for the magnets.
Well, this is all up, Mr. Chairman, and I was just wondering if they do like the deer do on my farms. Those dirty rascals go along when the corn gets about 3 foot tall, and they take and pull the tops out of the corn. They just have a fun time doing that. So about the first 4 or 6 rows around at least one of the farms I got that does border a wildlife management area doesn't get any grain to grow on because they pull the tops out, and that's where the tassel is, and they just have a lot of fun doing that. I was wondering if I could get any compensation. I was going to leave the first 2 rows for the wildlife anyway, but since there isn't anything growing on it, then I can't do that. So I'm trying to help out.
Mr. Friezo, will represent Magnus receive compensation for that?
Mr. Chair, you'd have to put some antlers that's similar to this on top of those deers.
Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Junkie.
Just to the how you pay the compensation, who goes up and makes the assessment? Do you hire someone, or do you have our field staff out there? Do you have an insurance adjuster that comes out, like, for hail damage, or how do you go about that?
Mr. Friezo.
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, you know, any claim needs to be verified generally by a conservation officer or extension, and generally extension provides the valuation for us. So we're essentially a clearinghouse, so each claim does have to be verified by a professional in the field, and generally a conservation officer.
Representative Junkie. All right.
Friezo.
Representative Schmansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Friezo, do we have a head count on the elk herd up there? What is it costing us per animal up there for crop damage?
Mr. Friezo.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't know what the actual count is. I know in discussions with DNR, there's 3 or 4 basic herds that have developed. There's a herd that moves down from Canada. There's a herd that is more domesticated. As to the actual counts, I'd have to, you know, get back to you on that. But,
okay. Thank you.
Mr. Manson. Representative Johnson.
Just following up on Representative Magnus's question, I thought we did in the past pay some compensation, not necessarily for his deer, but geese and ducks that have come out. I seem to remember years ago that we maybe had an account that paid for that, either us or DNR.
Friezo.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, we would pay if it's a wolf attack on if. If it falls in the definition of livestock, we would pay that, but not deer that are causing damage or geese or anything like that.
Mr. Chair, I'll follow up on that. I could have sworn that geese coming out and eating just cotyledon-type-sized soybeans that we've paid damage in the past, and maybe it was through DNR. I don't know, but I seem to remember a program like that.
Yeah, Representative Junkie, I believe it was through the DNR. We had some farmers in our neck of the woods that filed a claim. Mr. Friezel?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, that's very likely the case through the DNR, but as far as I know, in Department of Agriculture, it's only been for gray wolf and elk.
And Mr. Chair, the reason for my question is, Mr. Friezel and others, as we're looking at streamlining around here and cutting costs, if we have 2 programs set up, one in the Department of Ag, one in DNR, that's essentially doing the same thing, I think it behooves us to do that checking. And if it is crop damage, I suspect it should be under your auspices here in the department. So I guess I'm going to ask staff over here, Mr. Sullivan, if he'd follow up with us and see if there's other programs like that hanging around the Capitol that we could maybe look at combining.
Yeah. All right. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Following up on Representative Schimansky's question, any talk with the DNR about loosening up hunting regulations up there to get rid of some of these animals?
Mr. Friezel.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there has been, I'm aware there's been a great deal of discussion just on those. They've been issuing increased shooting permits, which allow individual farmers to take elk. They are, I know, actively trying to engage some more stringent management programs to bring that herd under greater control. So I know DNR is very aware of this. They've heard loud and clear from the farmers in the area, so they are engaged, and there are steps being taken.
Mr. Anderson, follow up? Friezel.
Thanks. And then finally, this is the proposed reduction, which is the plant pest survey. It would be a reduction of about $200,000 a year. we would reduce staff by 2.2 FTE. This is a survey that basically looked at eight major crops across the state. It has provided good historical and academic information, but looking at the priorities that we face, we felt that some of this information could be developed or provided by individual crop consultants or other sources. So that's the reduction that is proposed for our division. Thank you. And with that, picture of a very beautiful place. I'd encourage everyone to visit Norway.
Very nice. I have to comment. It was a very nice presentation, Ms. Cheney. I want to thank you as well. I don't know if you had anything to do with that, but it's much better than the last one that the Department of Ag brought forward. So, Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Friesel. Looking at your budget sheet, I see the ag fund, the fee side of your department funding is going up about 6%. This next biennium, is that a fee increase that you've put in place for some of your inspection fees and others, or is that just a natural, there's more people getting inspected, growth in some of those areas, or it's about 6.2% increase in the fee-driven side of it, which I'm not disagreeing with. I'm just wondering if you've done the increase or if it's more people getting services.
Mr. Friesel.
Mr. Chair, Junkie, you are correct. There is an increase, but it's not an increase in the actual fees. That's our projection on the nursery industry, for example, is growing every year, so we're doing more and more dealers. Our FIDO fees almost doubled from a year ago, so it's just our estimate of the natural growth of some of these fee-based programs.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Junkie.
When is the last time we've done kind of across-the-board fee increases in your department?
Friesel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, we increased both the seed fees, the export fees, and the nursery fees, I believe it was 4 years ago.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Junkie.
Do you ever get customers chewing you out about the price of the fees, or are they seem to be reasonable?
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, we work very closely with industry, and in particular, I would reference the nursery industry. We work with them. They wanted a strong nursery program, and they specifically said they wanted an additional inspector. And we pointed out to them with a fee-based program, it used to be a general fund, that there's the additional expense of indirect on that. And they were very supportive. There were individuals who, you know, very loudly said that they didn't like the fees, but the industry as a whole, I think, was very supportive. And we found the same with the export certificates are generally people like Cargill and those kind of big entities. So for us to go from $50 to $75 was not a big stretch. And it's really just a fee base. We're not making money. We're just trying to cover costs of the agency.
And Mr. Chair, one last question. Have you ever surveyed other states to see how we compare in some of these inspection fees, especially our surrounding states?
Friesel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, absolutely. That's one of the first things we do is we check our surrounding state fees. We, and depending on the program, we are higher than some states in some fees, and in other areas we're lower. Potato fees, for example, we're probably in the middle of the range. I'd say we're in the middle with nursery. On the export fees, we're probably on the high side. Sometimes it's hard to compare with other states because oftentimes general funds are put into those programs, so it's not always an apples-to-apples comparison.
Representative Johnson.
Oh, thank you.
All right, Representative Fowler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is very closely related to that. On the nursery, we're looking at about $1 million approximately total expense here. What percentage of that is covered by the fees from the nursery associations?
Mr. Friesel. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is 100% covered by fees by the industry.
Representative Powell?
Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. In your biennium, about a $1.2 million reduction for the invasive species. My concern is somebody else going to pick up some of that research? We need a lot of that in terms of aphids and things like that. Is somebody else going to pick up some of that?
Friesel.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the reduction to us is primarily the plant pest survey, and so that's really more endemic pests. So really most of our invasive pests are intact. The other division will talk a little bit about the impacts to their programs. But I will point out, we do get good support from the federal government for many of these. Whether or not that holds or not, you know, is anybody's guess.
Representative Anderson? Representative Magnus?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Friesel, I'm just wondering, on a historical basis, are you seeing any increased concern from importing countries? And are you seeing them, you know, especially on a sanitary and phytosanitary basis, kicking up more problems as we go along now on say on a trend level the past few years? Are you seeing some of these import countries increasingly demand more services for sanitary and phytosanitary inspections?
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, we absolutely have it. They've become much more complicated. They're much more demanding. And off of Minnesota is getting infested with a few pests. A good example is Japanese beetle, which is relatively new to the Twin Cities. And many countries have prohibitions against importing stock that have from places that have Japanese beetle. But the biggest thing that we're seeing is just the complexity and the list of pests involved that we have to look for. And frankly, it's costing us a lot of extra time for each of these phytos that we issue. And we also need, it's important to do these surveys that we can survey the state and say, Minnesota doesn't have particular pests. Soybean cyst nematode is another good example where part of the state is infested and part of the state is not. And so it's very important that we can say, that we can prove that certain counties are free of the pests so those commodities can ship unhindered to other countries.
And Mr. Chairman, a follow-up to that, are you, Mr. Friesel, are you seeing the federals come in and step up and be willing to help a little more with funding or whatever needs we have as we see the increasing use of phytosanitary and sanitary rules to try to inhibit some trade, agricultural trade?
Mr. Friesel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, we are... The federal government provides good support from a technical standpoint from the phytos, but they have not offered any additional resources. They have offered to start charging us a fee of $16 for the opportunity for us to provide the certificate. So the fees will go up in amount because of this additional federal surcharge, but we do not receive any funding from the federal government for export certificates.
Thank you. President Magus. Any other questions from members? Ms. Cheney, is there anybody else to testify on this division?
Mr. Chair, no, not on this division. We have another division prepared to testify as well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Friesel.
Thank you.
Okay, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent, please.
Good morning. My name is, Mr. Chair, good morning. My name is Peter Shepherd. I work with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I've been there 10 months, and I'm the Division Director for Ag Development and Financial Assistance.
Okay.
And I'm Mary Hanks. I'm the Assistant Director for the same division.
Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, committee members. This morning, I would like to overview what our division does, talk a little bit about a few individual programs, our reductions that will be coming in those programs, then cover a little bit of the budget and the finances that we work with.
Ms. Cheney?
Mr. Chair, page 46 of the budget book.
Thank you. Please proceed.
We support the mission of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture with the success and innovation of farmers, agriculture businesses, and communities. We're trying to promote that and help them do a better job. We do that in four major ways, and I would like to talk about that a little bit this morning. We do have three sections and 29 FTEs that do this. And as we do that, we support the next generation of farmers who are helping agriculture producers meet environmental goals. We're ensuring the viability of agriculture at that rural-urban interface, and finally, we're diversifying agriculture production and opportunities. As we look at ways that we're supporting the next generation of farmers, we do that with low-interest loans and grants. We have the Rural Finance Authority, And there used to be two divisions, the Rural Finance Division and an Ag Development or Ag Resource and Management Division. They have been combined just recently, and so as I talked this morning, it's about those two combined divisions. Rural Finance Authority offers a number of different loans supporting beginning farmers, livestock producers, and farmers facing financial adversity. We also have a Sustainable Ag, both grants and loan programs that help do that as well. We're looking at trying to meet the land and agriculture land needs for the future, supporting the education and programs that the counties can offer to keep ag land viable for those countries. We're also looking at alternative production and methods of crops with low input crops that have high value return and high value crops, community supported agriculture. We have a lot of information on our web and printed material that we're doing to help people do that. We also are looking to help agriculture producers meet their environmental goals. The environment is an important thing out there. Farmers are try to be strong environmentalists. We want them to be involved in the agriculture sector in developing the solutions to help meet those environmental needs. We're doing that by trying to be at the table to give them information on how to do that, information about meetings that are coming up. Alternative pest control methods. We have a lot of work that we've done within the biological control area, how to use more than just pesticides to control something, but look at native pests that are can support or can go after the non-native pests that are with us. Integrated pest management is another effort that we have for alternative pest control methods. We have innovative farming practices, looking at new ways to do some of the things that we're doing, cover crops, and as a picture you see on the board up there is a cover crop example. We used actually helicopter to do rye seeding within some cropland in southeastern Minnesota. Do that in the late fall so that it can help protect the soil loss and uptake of nitrogen to have another way of, again, not having nitrates running into the groundwater. Just an example, we also work with grazing, conservation, tillage. We have financial assistance that we're trying to promote for practical environmental stewardship. We have a new conservation funding guide that's out there, so farmers have their conservation plans. How can we help look for other ways to find financial assistance for those farmers and what they do? And we also have multiple on-farm drainage demonstrations and research projects going on in different parts of the state, so there's something close by. Again, looking at more ways of managing the water, keeping it on the land or what it does flow through there. How can we use it to help crops the most and have the least environmental impact? Finally, as we look at ensuring the viability of agriculture at the rural-urban interface, we are looking at the development rights, education, and protecting agriculture for the future within counties and groups that are out there looking at land use. We're having dialogue or trying to promote dialogue for good neighbor policies. As you know, in agriculture, we have livestock as well as crops that are out there. And when you get the interface of people and production, sometimes it doesn't always go as smooth as we want. We're looking for ways to make that smoother, to help livestock be successful in the rural areas, and to help people live in those rural areas and be happy with what they're doing. And so the things that we can do to help promote good practices, the research and demonstrations that are out there for that. We also do a lot of environmental review to look at the ag impacts anytime there's development, whether that's residential, commercial, energy lines, that would be pipelines, electric lines, and transportation, highways that are going through. And if there's an environmental need that's a review that's out there, we do the ag impact of that. Finally, in our last major area that we work with, diversifying agriculture production and opportunities as we look ahead into the future, the expansion of organic and specialty crop production. Two different areas that we're working in, and we do that in a number of different ways. We have some funds to do research in the financial and business aspects of organic and specialty crop production so that as more people are looking at that, have a better understanding of what the cost is to go into that, what it takes to be successful within that. We have conferences and other things that we'll talk about a little more later. Alternative livestock production, again, looking at more ways to do the great things we want to within the state of Minnesota in livestock production, grazing. We have materials that we've put out for dairy and poultry and hogs, deep bedding, sustainable ag grants are ways of demonstrating some of these type of things. And finally, the growth of urban, ex-urban agriculture and local foods. And when we say urban, ex-urban, it's that urban and suburban area. Agriculture, as we look at what the Department of Ag does, it can not only be just working with the few farmers that are out there, but it's about understanding the food that we eat and having safe food and looking at what that can be with all of society. And I think as we look at that growth in urban ex-urban agriculture, gardens, community gardens, urban pest management, those types of things are all important within that area. We carry out all the work that I've just talked about in four major ways. We sponsor and conduct research and development of demonstration plots, which you've given some examples of that are out there. We're looking at education, trying to change people through the tools, outreach, technical assistance that we can provide. We, as we talked about, have financial assistance in a number of different programs in a number of different ways. So what we're talking about and the changes we're trying to do, we're helping farmers to bridge to get there. And finally, participating in the policy discussions and development. We need to be at the table as we look at the things that affect ag and how ag can do a better job of being a part of the larger society as we put some of that together. And we want to take a few minutes to talk about what I've just given you is the big picture overview. We want to take a few minutes to talk about some individual programs and some specific reductions that will be taking place. I'd like to introduce Mary Hanks, who's our assistant director, to do that.
Thanks. Please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we want to talk about just a couple of areas in the division that I oversee as supervisor as well as the assistant director.
Ms. Hanks, if you could use the microphone, please.
Sorry.
Thanks.
We're very excited about some of the things that we do, and we just wanted to highlight a couple of different program areas. The first is organic agriculture. Minnesota is ranked the number five state in the United States for number of organic farmers and number six for number of acres. We estimate we have about 600 organic farmers and about 200 companies that are certified organic. And I hope you enjoyed the ginger snaps and the vanilla wafers, organic cookies produced by a Minnesota company, one of the certified companies that we try to help. The demand for organic food along with local food is growing every year, and the role of our division is to assist producers in the production end. I think you heard from the marketing division last week. They do the marketing end. We help producers produce so they can promote if there's a question about the differentiation between the two divisions. Some of the things that we do with organic farmers, we have a grant from USDA, the Risk Management Agency, to do farm financial management with those producers. There were some questions a number of years ago, what does it cost an organic farmer to grow an acre of corn? Senator Dill brought that up several years ago. And we thought, well, what a great idea. We have the farm financial report for most farms in the state. But we have nothing for organic, and we can't talk to an organic farmer and say, you know, here's what are some of the expenses that you can expect, some of the labor that you might expect. So now, with the help of the Risk Management Agency grant, we put out a report on organic farms. It's very similar to what is put out for the rest of the farms in the state. What that grant allowed us to do is provide scholarships for organic farmers to enroll in the same farm business management classes that the rest of the farmers enroll in. The first year, I think it's an 80% scholarship, and it declines each year 80 to 50 to 25 over a three-year period. And we build our database, and farmers can go and look and see what it costs to farm organically. And it's just a really great program, very well respected, and we now have money through the specialty crop money from USDA also to bring specialty crop farmers, vegetable producers, nurseries, into the same type of program and build the same kind of database.
Ms. Hanks, if somebody wants to receive a copy of that, who do they contact?
They can probably get back to Quinn,
okay.
Mr. Chair.
All right.
Maybe let Quinn know would be the easiest because I'm sure you have her phone number. But okay.
How about the general public?
This is, Mr. Chair, this is online.
Okay.
And, everybody knows our organic specialist, Meg Moynihan.
All right.
So most people know how to get hold of her.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Junkie.
Specifically to the organic budget, I'm looking on page 69 of the budget book under the federal fund summary, and I know that there was a lot more organic money available in the new farm bill, and that's reflected here. Obviously, you've gone from zero to 338 and 350,000 a year coming from the feds, I suspect, through the new farm bill. Is that money available for organic licensing assistance? Because in the past, we put money in to assist with that. We're looking at the chess pieces on the board, and will some of this money perhaps cover some of what we were already doing, and we can take a fresh look at that as we're budgeting this year?
Thanks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Junkie, yes, most of that money came to us to provide organic certification cost share.
Okay.
So the Minnesota was the first state in the United States to do cost share, and the feds copied our program and made it available nationwide to all states. So this year we have $275,000 from the federal government, USDA, to provide cost share.
Right. That's because our programs are the best.
They are.
They copy them.
They are.
Junkie?
And it's just noting there's no match requirements on that either, according to the federal guideline here.
Mr. Chair and Representative, that is correct.
All right. Thank you.
Representative Eakin.
Well, I just had a question about, as far as the ranking. I found it interesting you were saying fifth in the nation as far as the number of farmers and sixth as far as the number of acres, and that's total number. I was wondering as far as percentage, the percentage of the number of farmers and the percentage of the acres, if you had any figures on that.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eakin, I'm not sure how many farmers we have in Minnesota. I should know that, shouldn't I? Well, it'd be 600 organic farmers over 80. I should have brought the eggs.
All right, Ms. Cheney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eakin, we'd be happy to get that information for you.
Representative Eakin? Thanks. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Minnesota organic farms are slightly smaller by acre than the more traditional farms. They range in size from slightly less than 2 acres up to 3,000, but tend on average to be smaller, if that helps just a little bit.
Representative Junkie.
For those smaller acreages, are most of those in the Twin Cities? I'm thinking of Hmong Farms, Farmers Market type things, Fresh Market, and truck farms located within 50 miles of the suburban areas, or are they mainly out in our area, outstate Minnesota?
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, many of them are closer to metropolitan areas, so the Twin Cities, Rochester, Mankato, St. Cloud, down to smaller metropolitan areas as well, because that's where the markets are.
Representative Junkie. Right. Thanks. Please proceed.
One of the other things that we do in organic agriculture is do education and workshops. We do the Minnesota Organic Conference every year in January in St. Cloud. The attendance of that has been growing every year. We're up to about 425 people who attend, and it's growing every year, and we get great reviews, and we love doing that. We're really shooting for the Upper Midwest Conference, which was just held 2 weeks ago in La Crosse, gets 2,500 people. And we're kind of setting our sights there, hoping to maybe grow, maybe not that big, but eventually over time.
Representative Junkie.
So that specifically, what kind of costs above and beyond staffing costs are involved with that? How do we recover costs for that? Are we paying a fee to attend the organic conference? Are there displayers that set up and pay us to have their wares shown there? Is there federal money involved for organic conference in addition to the organic licensing? Again, I'm trying to understand how much we have to pay for this, or if there's ways that we can get around that and still have our organic conference this year.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, aside from staff costs, the conference pays for itself. I think we were even about $6,000 or $7,000 ahead this year from actual costs. We have a trade show with sponsors. The federal money that's involved comes from sponsorships from NRCS, FSA, Risk Management Agency, so federal at the state level.
Right.
And we also charge a registration fee.
Okay, thank you.
Thank
and we also serve organic food, which gets the highest ratings usually on the evaluation.
Very good.
Also along the same lines, we're celebrating our 20th anniversary of our Sustainable Ag Demonstration Grant Program and our Green Book. I think many of you, I think we send copies of these over to your committee every year. This is, see the picture on the screen, and this is last year. The 20th anniversary one will come out in May or June this year. We've had great great outpouring of support for the Green Book and the programs. People love getting this. It's usually farmer research. Farmers like to read farmer research. It's trying things on the ground, answering questions that farmers have on their own farms. Over the years, we have gradually reduced the number of paper copies, and more people are going to the website, so we're making sure that that's available there. We're still a little reluctant to go to a full web-based publication because many people still have dial-up internet. I know I still do at home, and there's just no way that you can pull up a publication of this size through dial-up. It would take hours and hours. But we're gradually working that way, and the survey that we're doing of organic producers, we're asking the question there what kind of web services they have, trying to get a handle on who has dial-up and who has quicker stuff so that we'll have a little better handle on whether we can start to move more and more to web-based to reduce costs mostly. Also,
Representative Junkie.
I'm trying to think of questions here. And the reason, members, I'm asking these questions and to you too is I'm strongly going to suggest that as this committee does their budget over the next month, that our focus is on job retention. I'd hate to lose an assistant director or a director from a division if I can cut a non-job or a legislative liaison or a financial person in back there. I think it's important. I told this story. I'll just tell it briefly. One year, I wasn't here, but Phyllis Kahn was running Government Operations Finance Committee, and she was literally cutting the jobs of people who were sitting in the audience. So it got to be a real testy time back then. We're not doing that, but I am focused on some of these things, the cost of this book. That's why I'm asked about organic conference. You know, where are there places in our budgets? Everyone's going to be making cuts this year. I don't think that's any mystery. And where are there places in the budget that are would not affect one job? That's why I asked about the organic labeling. You know, if we can pick that up federally, no one's job is affected, and we move on, and everything's good. I guess I'm asking the Green Book, too, what's the cost of that, putting it out to the department, or is that somehow... you say you're going to more web-based, which is good. So what are you looking at for cost of this program this year? And what if the money wasn't there?
So first of all, everybody take a deep breath. All right? He's not coming after you. You know, my vice chair, he does a very good job. He asks thorough questions. So.
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, the cost of the Green Book itself is primarily staff time. The recipients of the grants send in a report every year as a requirement, and many of them come in fairly good shape. We give them the format and they write their article, but most times we use staff to provide some consistency and get them in good shape for the book. The printing itself runs around $3,000 to $4,000,
okay.
And postage probably another 1,000.
Let me drill down in a different direction. What if that grant program wasn't here? Would the Green Book just disappear for a year or two then if there's nothing to report? And have we seen all those grants going out pretty much 100%? Or is there, have we seen an increase in the thickness of that Green Book, a decrease? Where are we at on some of those things?
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie. The table that's up now, the Green Book shrinks and increases as the number of grant projects shrinks or increases. And over the years, I've been at the department for a little over 18 years, so I've been through 18 of the Green Books now. We've been down to $40,000 a year for the grant program during some of the lean years early on. Green Book got small. We've been up right now. We're at 160,000, so the Green Book's getting a little bigger. We've always made do. We found the best project. If we had less money, we would focus in on some of the high interest topics right now, which seem to be specialty crops, season extension, high tunnels, you know, local food related things, very high demand. We would ask people to submit proposals for less money. The cap is $25,000, but you know, if you let people know you're only looking for $5,000 projects, they'll come in at $5,000. If there was no grant money, we would continue the Green Book until all the currently funded projects are completed.
Representative Duncan.
Have you ever, I mean, the Green Book is good. People look at it for source information on what others are doing and demonstration projects. Have we ever coordinated the Green Book with the University of Minnesota Extension, surrounding states extension, frankly, on the years in the past when the Green Book has gotten thinner, couldn't we supplement that book with other research in other states or other universities or extension on sustainable projects and other things? Have you done that in the past, or could that be done in the future?
And thanks.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Duncan, right now we're coordinating and including articles from the USDA Sustainable Ag Research and Education Program, those projects in Minnesota. So reports on those have also, and we did that for exactly the same reason that you suggested, that our funds were reduced, so we went to that program and said, let's include your projects as well. This is one of the governor's recommended reductions to the grant program, and this year we did unallot some of the grant funds, primarily for the same reason that you have said. We want to retain staff.
Mm-hmm.
They're such a huge resource, it's hard to replace. And also, as we were looking at the number of grant proposals we got in this year, we had fewer proposals, and you know, a quick scan, you know, we figured we could fund the best one with a reduced amount of money, so we unallotted some of it for this fiscal year.
Right. Mr. Chair, I'll just finish up. I think that's a great idea, and I'm glad you're doing that. And I would encourage you, if funding is decreased, as the governor suggested, or other things, that we even look at similar biomes, northern Iowa, Wisconsin. I think that anything going on in those states would be very applicable to Minnesota, too, and be of interest to our sustainable and organic folks out there. So I'd even encourage you to expand your realm of searching out information.
Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question, very quick. I like this program. I think it's a great program. Can you give me an idea how many full-time equivalents are involved with this program, or what percentage of a full-time equivalent are involved with this program? Thanks.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, currently assigned to the Sustainable Ag Program, I'd say about 2.5 FTEs.
Representative Faust.
Can you give me an idea what they're doing besides the grant program and the Green Book?
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I include our grazing specialist in the Sustainable Ag Program. He writes grazing plans for farmers through a contribution agreement with USDA, NRCS here in the state. They pay half his salary, we pay the other half. We also do workshops. Part of my time is there is supervising the program. Trying to think of some. It's primarily Green Book field days. Working with other groups like the Sustainable Farming Association and doing workshops again and outreach. We try to partner with as many people as possible. You know, with 2.5 people. We do a lot of partnering.
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the answer. The reason I ask is and not necessarily in this committee, but I've heard of other places where, you know, we have an employee that is working, you know, maybe it's with the state and county in some other area, and they give out, you know, $10,000 or $20,000 worth of grants, and the salary for the person is, you know, $50,000 or $60,000, and it doesn't seem to be a very efficient ratio of grants to employee time. So that's why I'm asking.
Thanks. Mr. Chairman, Representative, so the woman who manages the grant program for us also manages the integrated pest management program and does some other things. So it's you know, honestly, it's only about 25% to 30% of her job just to manage this.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Otremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Some of the questions were answered. But I look at we have 160,000 per year, and we've gone way down to 60 per year. Why is it such a big jump from that to that?
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Otremba, I think part of it comes to what Representative Junkie was talking about, is trying to retain staff over grants.
Representative Otremba?
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. You still have the same FTEs, but your dollars are down. So I'm not sure why the other numbers didn't work with 2.5 FTEs. Seems a little skewed.
Ms. Cheney, would you like to field that one?
Mr. Chair, Representative Otremba, the governor's budget reflects a cut to the grant program of $100,000, and that was the point. We didn't make cuts within the staffing within the division. We did make cuts to the grant program and the activities that would be carried out by the grant program.
Representative Otremba.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Well, Homeland Security actually requires us to grow more organic, not necessarily organic, but locally grown food. And so some of those grants could be getting to other people in other areas, especially with the economy. So it's out there. It's pretty bad. And so I think some of those grants would actually build labor in our areas.
Ms. Cheney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Otremba, we actually received fewer grant applications in this past year and fewer quality applications. So the governor's budget was based on an evaluation of the participation levels in the program and the types of applications that we were receiving. I would like to emphasize that this is just the sustainable agriculture grant program. We are continuing to do, as a department, all of the organic and sustainable activities that have been previously discussed.
Okay. Representative Otremba, follow-up?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I still think it's that the $60,000 isn't enough because I just don't see it that way. I see that the dollars are way lower, and the FTEs are the same, and that's what I feel.
Thank you, Representative Otremba, and I'll have a conversation with my vice chair over here, Representative Junkie, as well, and we'll address that. Right, Representative Junkie?
We'll take everything into consideration over the next month, and you'll all be involved.
Thank you. And thanks.
Mr. Chairman, I see the time, and I'll try to speed up a little bit. The other thing I'd like to talk about, because it's another change item, this change item is on page 17 of the book. The reduction in the pest management, biocontrol, and urban pest management programs in our division. You heard Mr. Friezo talk about the pest management invasive species work that they do in their division. Our role in invasive species is to assist land managers in managing pests that have already become established, that weren't held at the border, that actually got in and established and are now causing problems. So we have We have quite a bit of work that we do in biological control. We have people working with land managers, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, DNR, private landowners, in looking at using biological control for weed management, leafy spurge, spotted knapweed. We have some experimental work going on with tansy and some other weeds. Again, working with the counties, primarily the ag inspectors, we try to coordinate the collection of the biocontrol agents. For example, for leafy spurge, we let people know where we're collecting. They come with their little buckets. They get their leafy spurge flea beetles and take it back to their own sites in their own counties, to their own weed infestations. We've been doing this for quite some time, and it's our hope that the counties and DNR and Extension will pick up some of these activities as we're reducing our level of activity. Again, this is the reduction on page 17 of your book. We're reducing the activities in integrated pest management by 50%, biocontrol efforts by about 50%, and eliminating the urban pest management program, which is primarily a greenhouse on the Metro State campus where we raise plants primarily to raise biocontrol agents and to augment the natural populations. Right now, what we're doing is raising soybean plants and soybean aphids, working with the university on soybean biocontrol agents for release later into the field.
Excuse me, Ms. Hanks. Representative Faust, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned that you're hoping that a lot of the other groups pick up the cost of this, and you know they're hurting for dollars too. And isn't this a perfect example of tripping over dollars to pick up nickels? Because you know if some of these species take off, you know it can cost us billions and billions down the road to try to put that, you know, that genie back in the bottle. And so you know, isn't this a relatively poor decision?
Thanks. Or Ms. Janie, would like to field that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Faust, I think we all had to evaluate the entire department's budget this year. We had to refocus our efforts on our core mission, and the governor's budget reflects the decisions made based on refocusing on that core. I think that there were some tougher choices to be made this year, but the governor's budget reflects the core mission of the department.
Representative Faust.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate that, but it doesn't make me sleep any better at night. So.
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, also on this slide, this reduction will result in the loss of about 4.5 FTEs. Some good news on the pest management front is the partnership between the University of Minnesota and the Department of Ag on the quarantine facility on the U of M St. Paul campus. Bonding money was provided to the university to expand the original quarantine facility, which was for biocontrol agent introduction, to a plant pathology facility. And we have our first quarantine plant pathogen in that facility, went in last month. It's UG99 wheat stem rust. Faculty at the university are working on that, screening wheat varieties, and it's just a great example of the cooperation between the university and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Just great news.
Mr. Chair? Yes, please. Mr. Shepherd.
Thank you very much to Assistant Director Hanks for the overview of some of those specific programs and some of the cuts that we do have. We'd like to finish up a little bit with an overview of the budget, which is reflected on page 49 of the booklet. I believe that has been since updated in the system a little bit, but I think it's important to understand that we are a non-regulatory part of what the Department of Ag does. We don't have very much dedicated funds. The budget that we do have accounts for 72% of it comes from the general fund. We get about 14% or $500,000 from federal grants, and then another 14% from other sources of dedicated funds and other projects that way. The reduction to that general fund is about 15%. That is the revenue that we get that we're able to spend to do the dollars, to do the work that we talked about in the beginning and the special programs that Mrs. Hanks has talked about, Assistant Director. The other programs, though, that we do work with, and if you look at the bottom of the sheet on page 49, it isn't necessarily reflected there. The RFA loan programs, we handle quite a bit of money as pass-through. Our RFA program is funded through bond funds or user finance. You authorize the opportunity for us to sell the bonds. The farmer borrows the money at a lower interest rate that's above the price of the bond, and then we pay that back. So there's no cost to the state to do that. Over the years since 1986 that RFA was founded, we've had $153 million go out in over 2,332 loans to beginning farmers, to livestock producers, value-added, all the different programs that we do have.
Excuse me, Mr. Shepard. Representative Junkie, you have a question.
Well, just as we're looking at the numbers there, miscellaneous special revenue took a pretty good hike. What's in that category, and why are we seeing higher collections than that?
Mr. Shepard.
Went from about almost 500,000 to 1,000,001. So it's doubled or more in the next projection.
I do believe the 1,000,001 refers to the biennium overall.
Yep.
If you look at it on a year-to-year basis, as we look at where the special revenues come from, part of that gets to be the way MAPS accounts for everything. We also have some higher numbers in there, I believe, because we have to put anticipated opportunities that may come with some grants and some other funding, so we have the authority to spend that. Not all that money may come directly because if grants or some other things that are non-federal don't come through, it's also due.
I guess I'm looking for a little more specificity on that. Where those revenues are coming from, what they're going to be used for.
Mr. Ernst, would you like to come down and state your name and who you represent for the record?
Mr. Chair, Steve Ernest, Financial Management Director for the Department of Agriculture. Mr. Chairman, on the miscellaneous special revenue line, there are some accounts in that fund that are the admin accounts for the RFA that are shown moving into here. As you can see, there are zeros on the RFA Rural Finance Administration Fund line, three up from the bottom there, and then they go to 500. We just didn't have them coded in the proper place in the history, and those accounts are now showing up here. So it's not an increase in spending, it's an increase as it's reported, and we do, as Mr. Shepard said, we have change the pages in the system now, and when the governor issues a revised version, you'll see a better representation of the history as it goes, as it compares.
All right.
Representative Johnson?
That's it.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Ernest. Mr. Shepard.
And as we look at that, and that's why I tried to put this and the next slide together. If you look at the bottom of the sheet, it shows us, you know, like $10 million there as a total around some expenses. We actually handle a lot more money than that. The current RFA has $55 million of outstanding debt to the farmers that we work with that. We give out about $12 million a year in 90 different loans in the different programs that we have through the RFA. That's in the bond funds. We also have a revolving fund that a number of years ago was put together from a few programs. There's $2.8 million in that revolving fund that has been given out over the years in 185 loans. Currently, there's $2.4 million in there as a corpus. So as we loan it out, they pay back in. We can loan it out again, and that is $200,000 to $3,000 per loan that goes out in about 15 loans per year. That includes the value added, the disaster program, the methane digester, which is a bigger loan that comes out of there once in a while when we have those. We also have the Agri Bond program, and that is a program where it's a federal program that allows us to certify loans under there that then become, the interest is tax free, so that allows the bank to give a lower interest rate to the farmers that get a loan underneath that. And we do about $2 million worth of, we authorize about $2 million worth of loans, through 10 loans on an average per year for that program. Finally, we also have the Ag DMP, or Ag Best Management Practices program, loan program.
That has been around since 1995. We've given out over $130 million. This is also a program that is revolving in nature. We keep adding to it a little bit from some federal funds and state funds over the years. But since 1995, we've been giving out $130 million to 9,298 loans. And that those dollars, we ask them when we're giving them the dollars, what other funds do they have? That actually leverages another $71 million dollars that have gone out there to help support clean water conservation efforts, less soil erosion, those type of things. We currently have a corpus of about $58.9 million, and that continues to grow as we get the new federal dollars in or state dollars from year to year. We give about $15 million in loans every year. 750 loans. We try to find a balancing act of advertising about this, but knowing we only have so much money that we could advertise more and give out more money. We just don't have enough to do that. We don't want to create false expectations with that. We also, though, work very closely. It's handled through local units of government. Based on what the water plan is, what the priorities are in that water plan, that's what's used to approve what the loans are. They go through the local bank. We give the money to the bank for 0% interest. They can charge up to 3% for their handling fee and to do the work of the loan. And the farmer or the landowner that's getting the loan then is allowed to use the money for that.
Excuse me. Representative Junkie has a question.
All right. I like the way you interrupt the mid-sentence.
Absolutely.
Quite a trait of yours, I've noticed. So,
we don't mess around.
Yeah, under your key measures, I see that you talk about loans provided to homeowners. Is that the only place? Is it the septic systems? Is where homeowners are? Would that be a farm home that you're talking about? Or how does a homeowner get involved with agriculture loans, best management practices loans? Is it on the farm site itself, or a sewer system might be connected to a workshop or a shed, or where? I saw the homeowners under your key measures too, and I wondered about that.
Mr. Shepherd. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie. It would be a rural residence, which could be a farm home or any other rural residence that has a septic system. So the local water plans are trying to have cleaner water, and they're managing, instead of having a septic system that runs straight into the creek or something else, you have to upgrade it to meet current regulations to do whatever else. So when we talk about homeowners, it's those rural residents that have an issue around that, that we're providing that low interest loan to help get that fixed.
And again, that's just individual systems, and this would be above and beyond what USDA or PFA here in the state are doing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dunkey, we are actually PFA's arm to do this. PFA is doing the wastewater treatment plants from a city or a town point of view, and then we handle the individual septic systems.
Okay. And, Mr. Chair, just another direction here. Can you briefly, very briefly, explain, you said, I see I'm getting under your key measures on page 47. I'm reading that financial assistance will be provided to more than 60 beginning farmers in Minnesota annually. What's the size of that loan again, and how does one qualify for a beginning farmer loan in the state?
Mr. Shepherd. Mr. Chair, Mr. Junkie and committee, they qualify based on net worth eligibility, and so for the RFA program, when we look at trying to support beginning farmers, instead of having a lot of different things, we say if you have a net worth of $405,000, that's tied to inflation, so it changes from year to year. If you have a net worth of under $405,000, you're considered a beginning farmer. If you're over that, you have enough basis and net worth to be able to go out on your own to get the loans and things that you need that way. So that's the criteria. Then we also participate with the local banks on that. We give 45% of the money to the local banks at a lower interest. Right now, with the last bond sale, with a lower interest rate, so we're at 4% interest compared to the bank's 6 to 7% interest. We do that for 10 years. They have to pay that back. We're at 45% or a maximum of $200,000. We do have a bill in place to raise that, but it's $200,000 at the moment, and that's been what they get. If they need more than that, then the bank or a relative or somebody else is helping to support that way.
Representative Johnson.
Is that for capital or operating, or what are they using the money for? To buy cattle for the operation, or to put in a parlor and redo a barn, or to buy a
10-acre pasture, or what's it used for?
Mr. Shepherd, we have 7 minutes.
Mr. Chair and Representative, basically anything that is depreciable capital. It is not for operating loans. It is only for something that we have can take as chattel. So on a beginning farmer part of it, mostly it's land and home. We have a livestock equipment program that would go for barns and other things that way. We also have an ag improvement program that involves anything that's usable on the farm.
And final question, are we meeting all the demand for what comes in on those loan requests?
Mr. Shepherd.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we are meeting all current demand.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. 6 minutes.
I'll just end to say that as a part of the governor's recommendation for the Ag BMT program, we'll be receiving an additional $4.5 million in the Clean Water Fund through the amendment that was passed as a recommendation. That will go into this to help continue, and that is only for use in areas that have approved TMDL plans to meet those TMDL needs. And I would open it up for questions.
Any questions from members? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. This is just a comment, a personal comment. We've heard talk today in the PowerPoint about the urban-rural interface. We've had some nice full-color books up here, but I would suggest that programs like pest management and invasive species should be part of the core duties of this department.
Like Thank comment you. On that? No? All right. Duly noted. Any other questions or comments? I want to thank the department for your testimony. All right. Remember, agriculture is the backbone of America. Meeting adjourned.